HBCU network is unmatched. I think that experience is unmatched. I think the sense of pride that you have in your Blackness is something that you can only get in this world. You know, I mean, some people are going to, you know, have better experiences than others, but for 4 years on campus, you know, I was a 5-year guy, but for 4 years on campus,
me too. It's okay.
You get to be around just the smartest, most beautiful, you know, just best Black people that you'll probably be around for life. And it's never gonna be like that, you know, when you enter the workspace. And
hey, what up, y'all? This your girl, Adrena Martin, host of the Historically Black Sense the Culture Effect podcast show, and thank you all for tuning in. I'm a 2012 graduate of the illustrious Tuskegee University and also a member of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated, and I created Historically Black Sense a few years ago, and it's a media platform dedicated to the culture of HBCUs, Black Greek life, and positive Black culture thrown in as well. Follow us on Instagram at Historically Black Sense, and you can also visit us online at www.hbcusense, and that's SINCE.com. So basically what this podcast is all about is we're going to be interviewing HBCU alumni, different Greek members, and also current students as well about the effect that their HBCU and their organization has had on their lives. So we're going to be having some great conversations, going to be some raw, open, and honest conversations, some much-needed conversations specifically, and some great guests as well. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Historically Black Sense, and I am interviewing Mr. Dan Ware here. What's going on, Dan?
What's going on? How are you?
I am amazing, and glad to be speaking with you today. We talked about all about your HBCU experience and how you started this great company of yours. So let's go ahead and get right into it. So give us a little bit of your background history before getting to FAMU.
Yeah, that was an interesting time for me. I'm born and raised in Chicago, so you know, a lot of it's stereotype. Some of it stereotype is rooted in insight a bit. I'm a marketer by trade, so that's one of the slogans I like to use. I grew up, you know, kind of standard Chicago life. And really, I was one of those kids that always like tried to hide that they were smart, like growing up, until like it mattered. Then I was like, oh wait, being smart is kind of cool. So but by then I had already had like blew my GPA in high school. So I had to like work, like my freshman year, I finished my freshman year with like a 0.9, and I had to work the entire year to get it to like, I mean, my entire high school career to get to like a 2.8 or something like that. And then, So it was crazy. But I ended up applying for a bunch of HBCUs. I only applied to HBCUs. I knew I wanted to go to HBCU. My cousin went to FAMU, but I was kind of one of those people. My older brother went to Howard. So I was like, I'm probably somewhere in the middle. And then I heard Hampton was really popping. And then a couple of my boys, they went to Tuskegee. So I was like, I was trying to figure out which one. I applied to all of them. And then when it really came down to it, I looked at all of my acceptance letters, and then Howard wanted like some crazy amount put down for your housing. Hampton wanted like a similarly crazy amount. And FAMU was like, well, you ain't got to put nothing down. You could pay it later. And I was like, taking care of myself at the time. So like, I had just paid for like prom and like graduation stuff. So I was like, I was looking at my little wallet, like, you know, I think FAMU is where we about to go there. So in my perception of FAMU, I didn't even visit at the time before I accepted it and went down there. But my perception was, I was like, oh, it's Miami. You know, everybody's walking around campus in like bathing suits, there's beaches around. And then when I got there, I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting.
Not what you thought, yeah.
Not at all.
Okay, that's dope. So you get on campus and FAMU, and then what did you major in?
So I majored in business administration with a concentration in finance. And throughout like my college career, me and my now business partners, we started off throwing parties. We had the opportunity to capitalize, like we were throwing parties for the frat. And then, you know, we realized we had an opportunity to throw parties at a club, and we took the opportunity to the frat, and the frat was like, of course, hey, we're alphas. We don't throw parties every week. you know, all that kind of stuff. So we were like, well, we'll just throw the parties ourselves. And at the time, this is like, we're, you know, 21, I think, at the time. So like, it's unheard of to be like young promoters at the time. So what we did is we got all of the different people around campus, like all the modeling agencies or modeling clubs and all the dance troops and like all the Greeks. And like, we added them to like a promotion team and we were like paying people out. And this was unheard of at the time, because at the time you would just pass out flyers, getting the club free. So we were paying people. So like, it took off. And, you know, I say all that to say is like, I was in school, but we were like running a full business, throwing parties 3 nights a week at campus, to the point where, you know, I was kind of getting into it with my teachers. I graduated magna cum laude, so my grades were tip top. I wasn't making the same mistake I made in high school. Like, I understand what GPA is now. I get it, right? So, but at the time, I'm throwing parties and, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to go on Wall Street and do all of this stuff. And then I was just like, yo, you know what? I can't make it to class right now. I have like a really important business meeting. And then I was like, you know, I'm actually running the business while in business school. So like, that was always an interesting dynamic. But, you know, when it was all said and done, I realized that like marketing was more my forte, as like, you know, we were marketing the parties, and then I had a couple internships and things like that. So although I finished with my bachelor's, and essentially finance, I ended up going into marketing.
Okay, so you graduate from FAM and then you went into the marketing, kind of job already lined up for you?
So I had a bunch, to be honest. So I interned every single summer. I think at my freshman, sophomore years, I had two internships at the same time. And then I was just like grinding it out, because I was paying for all of this stuff myself. So I was like, all right, I know how much I need, you know, to live not broke at school throughout the year. So I was like, I just make X amount. I need to buy a car. I was like, I'm a player, so I know it costs this amount to like, you know, be an alpha and all that stuff. Like, I'm that type of person where, you know, I get obsessed about like a goal. Like, I see a goal, I'm like, all right, breaking it down, all the little things I need to do. But like I said, I thought I was going on Wall Street, did internship at the Federal Reserve, realized I didn't really like that area of finance, and I was going to go try and do something at JP Morgan. I didn't end up getting that interview, but I ended up getting one at Eli Lilly doing pharmaceutical sales. So that put me in like this sales marketing track. And by the time I graduated, I had offers from all of them. Plus I had one with Pepsi. And I was like, I like sat down when I graduated and I was like, all right, what ultimately do I want to do? And then, you know, I looked at all of them and I was like, what I want to do is I want to be the guy that produces this Beyonce Super Bowl show. And like, that was like, Beyonce just did it at that time. And I was like, that's what I want to do. So I was like, the Pepsi role was something totally different, but I was like, I know me, as long as I like accept it, I'll figure out how to get into marketing and do all of that stuff. So I ended up taking that job offer in Miami, and it was my lowest job offer. I didn't know nobody in Miami. Like, it was intense. So yeah, that was pretty much it.
Wow, that's dope. So you had a lot of, you stayed pretty busy doing your school time, then you graduated, you got these opportunities. So what led you into starting Brinker? Because, you know, I was checking out your page and I'm like, this is pretty interesting, like how you all are connecting the influencers with the actual artist. So what was the inspiration behind starting that?
Yeah, so, you know, once we all kind of got in our different fields, we were still throwing parties, and that just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And so we started throwing this national day party called Carpe Diem, where we would go around the country and throw a day party. And what happened is every time, and we also ended up buying a club at one point in Chicago too, but that didn't pan out that well. But within that, each of those areas, artists will always say, hey, can I please just perform? Can I please, you know, get my song played at the club? Can you connect me with the DJ? And like, we were doing it, trying to do it manually, but it was like the juice wasn't worth the squeeze. It was just too hard to just connect all the pipes. So, you know, at this time, I'm doing marketing for Pepsi. You know, my other line brother and co-founder Rotimi is doing sales at Tyson. And then my other line brother, Amir, is he's in Silicon Valley working at Adobe. And then so one day he's, you know, So me and Timmy are both in Chicago, and then Amir is in Silicon Valley. And he calls us one day, you know, we're in the middle of like running the club. I think he called us like during, like, we were like in brunch or something, like doing something crazy. And he was like, I got it. I figured it out. And I was like, he was like, what you mean? And then he was like, I know how we're going to do this. And he was like, y'all just, you know, focus on, you know, throwing the parties and all this. Just let me cook up in Silicon Valley for a couple months and I'm going to figure it out. And he figured it out. And he came through and he bought his older brother, who's our pro fight, Tony Brown, into the fold. And he was like the Wall Street guy with all the finance connects, with all the venture capitalist connects. Because that's the thing about Black people in tech a lot is I think we oftentimes have great ideas, but a lot of times falls short when you're not able to get funding to keep, you know, producing ideas. So Tony coming in was crucial because he bought in all the plugs that was like, all right, we can actually get our ideas in front of people who are like the shot callers. So that helps tremendously. So, you know, everything just started, you know, just falling into place one after the other.
That's dope. So, okay, now what year was this again?
This is probably 2018, maybe.
2018. Okay. Yep. I think it's beautiful. Like, you got Lime Brothers and Profi. So it's literally like the brotherhood was able to come together and make this whole, everyone was able to bring their expertise and make this thing come to, you know, come to life. So explain, give us the breakdown of exactly what Breaker is and how people, how artists and influencers can get involved with it.
Yeah, so Breaker is essentially a tech-enabled music marketplace. And what that does is, you know, if you're an influencer, an influencer can be just content creator, gamer, you know, DJ, A&R, what have you. We just bucket them into influencer. And what we look at it is pretty much anybody who has digital or social real estate to sell, right? And what we do is we allow them to essentially create like a shop. Like, think of it like Shopify for influencers. We then have a network of artists that we put that in front of, and artists can connect with the influencers directly to promote their music. So, you know, instead of the traditional way of, there's one way where it's like, all right, I sign to a label does, you know, has a bunch of influencers or a bunch of agencies that they connect with, and they just kind of do it for me. The other way is if I'm an emerging artist, I'm DMing influencers, I'm spamming comments, I'm emailing people, you know, you got your booking email and I'm emailing you my mixtape and all of that stuff. And then, you know, once it comes down to it, so say the influencer's like, all right, I'll give it a shot. You know, then they then have to go and negotiate a price. And then there's the awkward point of like, all right, you pay me first to promote your music. And then, you know, I'll do it. Or the artist is like, well, you do it first and then I'll pay you. And then they got to worry about collecting money on the back end and doing all that. With Breaker, we eliminate all of that. We make it such a seamless process. We always refer to it as connecting the pipes. And really, you know, it makes it so it's a very safe process. So what is what I personally think the genius part about Breaker is we have two patents for an escrow system. So essentially what Breaker does is, if you're an influencer, you're say, hey, I'm going to go on Instagram Live and review your song and play your song to my followers. We then, you say you're charging $50 for that, $100. The artist says, all right, dope. I'll give you $50. Well, we hold that $50 first. And then once the influencer does what they promised to do, they then give us back a link to what they did. We look at the link, verify it, you know, check everything's copacetic. We check with the artist, say, hey, this is what you expect. This is what you like. They, you know, a lot of times saying, yes, this is perfect. We then release the funding. The artist, you know, gets what they want. The influencer gets paid. And now they're now able to make money off their Instagram or TikTok versus, and a lot of times just to do it for content, they would have done for free already. So they're just implementing music and it creates another revenue stream, especially during these like hard times, people not being able to make money. So, you know, I think a lot, both sides are like extremely happy, and we've only been active for 2 months, and from the, you know, reviews and things we've gotten, it's been really well.
Wow. Only for 2 months. Wow. I mean, I took some time and I did go through your page and I scrolled. It looks really good. Like the aesthetics of the page looks good. So I'm like, 2 months. I'm like, wow. So was it a period of, because you say this, the idea came into play in 2018. So was it a thing where you all kind of did a lot of pre-promotion before actually
Not a lot of pre-promotion, but it was a lot of building for sure. There was a lot of building. We would like hint at it. You know, I think we had a bit of a cheat code being that we were promoters and we just had just a number, of emails and things like that to like promote to people. We also, the frat held us down and, us just FAMU held us down and us in general, just being well connected throughout the HBCU network, just, they supported us crazy and it really helped blow it up when that day came for us to launch.
That's dope. And then, you talked too about being a tech startup and some of the struggles with actually getting funding, which you say one of your profiles, he was able to, make those connections. I mean, that's a beautiful thing because like you say, it's so many people who may have a tech idea or just any business idea, but I think it's specifically for African Americans getting into tech. I think it's a beautiful thing that you had those, connections and were able to launch like that. So being a tech company and just an entrepreneur in general, like what are some words of advice that you all have for other people who maybe looking to get into tech and maybe even if they don't have those connections but want to get in the field? Like what are some advice that you have for getting funding and growing?
Yeah. So, I mean, I always tell people to make sure that they're hitting a true white space and like a true need. Like, I think a lot of tech companies try to create solutions to problems that don't really exist, or it's a problem that maybe only they have. And so when it comes to getting like funding and you taking this in front of an investor, they want to see how big this can get, right? I think when they look at Breaker, they see, all right, you're talking about music now, but what happens when you get into art, fashion, brand? Like they see all of that stuff. And, of course we're heads down focused on the music industry right now, but they see that you can flip the switch. So like, for me, it's really about creating a true solution that's, weathered, that you've tested, and really having the tools to get that solution done, fixed, and created. I think a lot of people, they come up with great ideas, but where they start to fall apart is like that execution layer. Mm-hmm. And for me, it helps that, one, I think I'm working with guys that are, one, my line brothers and best friends, but then two, we've been doing business together for 10 years. So we're able to, we're able to have the tough conversations with each other. We're able to joke. We're able to like flip those switches on and off. And right now we're fine. We're trying to, as we're growing the team and like bringing people into the family, we have to like monitor like how we talk to each other. Cause sometimes we'd be like, are they okay? Cause they fight like dogs, or like we're joking with each other. But I think having that crucial team and everybody knowing their role and you having that trust in your co-founder or team member to say, no, they are the expert at this. I may have a thought about how you should do it, but even if I don't feel super passionately, I need to be able to trust that you're going to be able to get that done. And I think that's one thing that, we had to learn as we went, and we had many of fights like getting into each other's lanes as they kind of, especially when you're this small of business, because everybody's involved in everything, right? But you building that key team is crucial, because it is really hard to do that on your own. I've seen a lot of people try to do it on their own, and I sometimes don't have advice for them, because I'm like, I literally have my boys that what I think are geniuses and category experts to lean on and bounce stuff off of and to catch me when I fall and vice versa.
So do you think it's easier having that, that frat connection? Do you think it's easier working with them versus if it were like a completely different set of guys, say maybe like coworkers at a job or something?
I mean, I think of course the frat thing helps, because you're rooted in very similar morals and just that saying, you come from that same cloth. So, if we're arguing, I know how you're going to react, right? Or I know, those things, or like, I know what motivates you on the other end, right? Like, and I know that, as like, I'll just, for alphas, we're very passionate about uplifting Black people, right? And so like, for me, I don't have to question if that's top of mind for my line brothers, because I know that's top of mind. Right. We're building this marketplace to help, although it's open for everybody, right? At the core of it is rooted in culture and helping culture monetize on itself. So I think you can totally, have coworkers and or friends that you've known 10 years or 1 year. To me, it's about that connection and how deep you know, you think it is, and it really is.
Mm. Okay, so let's take it back a little bit and let's talk some HBCU life now. So what is being on campus at FAMU, like what is one of the biggest lessons you learn? And even being an alpha, like what's one of the biggest takeaways or two that you learned from that period of your life?
Oh, fail fast. That's my like model. Like I learned that like my very first day at Pepsi in their marketing department, they're like, hey, go crazy, like experiment, you know, and fail fast. If you're gonna fail, fail fast. So you learn that lesson and get back up. You know, I could think of many of times, you know, just at school, you know, where, you know, what somebody consider a failure, I consider a lesson, right? And I'll give a big example because I think we failed on one of the biggest stages possible. Me, Rotimi, and Amir, we had this idea to throw a homecoming concert, and we had Rick Ross come to the concert. We had a brand new stadium on campus, and we were gonna get it popping. And we got all these people to invest in us and give us money to help, you know, do execute this concert. And the concert didn't do as well as we thought. And, you know, it was a super embarrassing thing. And you know, we felt like failures because this thing, we had billboards around town and all this stuff. And then, so after you failed and billboards looking at you like,
yeah, so,
but you know, it's things like that where you take it a lesson, like, all right, I know what to do next time. You know, I know how to promote this next time. I know what acts to get next time. I know what networks to tap into and all of that stuff. So I always say, like, you know, don't get down on yourself and, you know, really embrace those failures. I don't even trust any, my line brothers always make fun of me. My co-founders always make fun of me because I always tell people, I don't trust people that don't have like a failure story or like are embarrassed of their failure story. Cause that's what makes the failures define you more than your wins.
Right, that's facts. That's mm-hmm. fact. You know, and even with failure and especially being a promoter, like you say, it's like, it's that constant, I guess trying to figure out how to market better than the last time to, you know, build that attraction to me. So, and even too for the, you know, especially it's so many historical wins for the HBCU community now. So mm-hmm. what are some words of advice that you have for aspiring HBCU students who are looking to join the HBCU family?
Do it. Don't let nobody send you off. And tell you that, you know, your degree is like worth less or anything like that. I mean, one, we're looking at, you know, Madam Vice President, right? Who's like the shining example right now of like, this is what you can do. But like for me, I also come from a chapter that Will Packer came from and Rob Hardy came from and, you know, all Cannonball and all these, you know, very prevalent and right in your face, you know, shining examples of like what you can be if you put in the work and do all these things. So I think the HBCU network is unmatched. I think that experience is unmatched. I think the sense of pride that you have in your Blackness is something that you can only get in this world. You know, I mean, some people are going to, you know, have better experiences than others, but for 4 years on campus, you know, I was a 5-year guy, but for 4 years on campus,
me too, it's okay.
You get to be around just the smartest, most beautiful, you know, just best Black people that you'll probably be around for life. And it's never gonna be like that, you know, when you enter the workspace and, you know, you go do this, you go do that. So take that example and take that chance and that time to make the most of that and to really find yourself, you know, in this HBCU space. It's something that I give all of the credit in the world for FAMU. I'll be a totally different person if I didn't go to FAMU. And I mean, for me, literally my business partners are my line brothers and FAMU graduates, right? So it's like, I literally wouldn't even have that if I had made a different choice, so.
Right. So what's one of the best memories that you have? Like maybe a fun time or something, maybe something that happened in the CAF. Like what's one of your, I don't know, like most memorable moments being on campus?
I mean, the thing is, right, it's your probate is going to be it. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's there's nothing that ever going to compare to that. I got married already. And like marriage is number one. Probate is number two, right? That I don't have kids. Just I'm sure like childbirth will be somewhere in between there. But like, you know, that was the amazing moment. But for me, I think the second thing would be our very first party. Like, we literally did not know, you know, this is like, we, Instagram had just came out. We were still like promoting off like Facebook and Twitter and like literally putting flyers on cars and like throwing flyers around the cafeteria, all that stuff. And so I remember us throwing our very first party. And after we worked this deal and all this stuff, and we were sitting in our house drinking a few cocktails. And I remember we sat together and we all prayed. And we was like, listen, like, you know, whatever happens, happens, you know, we're gonna let this, the winds define us. And if it's a loss, we're gonna learn from it. We're gonna do it. And I remember us pulling up to the club and seeing the line three blocks down. And we were like, oh, we got one. And then the next week it was like four blocks down. The next week it was like five blocks down. And I was like, oh, okay. This is like, but like, that was just an era in my life where that was probably the first time I truly tasted of, you know, relative success. And, you know, for me, it was how do I monetize on this and how do I capitalize on this and learn? And to be honest, that experience with just, you know, running my own business just has one, translated things I'm doing now, but then two, helped me to even get my internships and things of that nature at the time.
That's dope. I mean, and like you say, to have that.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
a whole nother level there, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, but that's dope. So you in particular, are you still doing the party promotion half, or are you just focused on Breaker?
So COVID has, of course, stopped that. I mean, we literally had a small gathering yesterday in Tampa for Super Bowl. But, you know, for the most part, we're heads down on Breaker, really just making this thing work. You know, I think, you know, we have the opportunity to, you know, change our lives, change our family's lives. And, you know, we're planning to open up a friends and family round soon where we'll allow, you know, people in our networks to invest in Breaker. So, you know, inevitably changing their lives and changing their family's life in the Black community. It's like, you know, one person, or a quote that I heard that somebody told me was like, you know, you measure a startup by how many people get rich around the founders. You know, not because, you know, of course, Mark Zuckerberg got rich, right? But what happened to Zuckerberg's neighbors and the kids he went to school with and like all of that? And that's where you feel like if you made a success, right? If you have one, right? So for me, I look at that like I'm grinding until, you know, our people is straight. I hope that every HBCU student in the world gives us a dollar, right? And they could turn that dollar into X amount, right? That's the goal that I help. Or I hope that they all use Breaker and able to, you know, monetize their social media. Cause it, you know, I always look at it like it's free money. Like, you was gonna post anyway, might as well throw some music behind that. And, you know,
that's dope.
Artists, and it helps you, you know?
Right. No, I think it's, and especially in this day and age when everybody's independent, because like you said, usually if you sign to a record label, then they pretty much handle that. But for independent artists, it's that, you know, DMing and like you say, messaging, comments and all that. So I think dope, like what y'all doing, like really
Thank you. I really appreciate that. The
hard part out of that. I mean, it's dope. So I wish you all much success. Do y'all have any upcoming projects or anything that you want people to be on the lookout for with it, or?
There is a lot of news coming down the pipeline that I cannot share yet. I would just say, you know, be on the lookout, follow us on socials, at Music Breaker, no E in the Breaker. But I will say I'm most excited about, opening up this friends and family round and really, allowing everybody to get a piece of the pie. I think that's something that really hits my core and my why a lot. And that's what I'm excited for. But nonetheless, you know, heads down grinding, we're trying to turn this thing into a monster. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, like I said, congratulations. And one more time, it's Music Breaker without the R, right?
Without the E.
Without the E.
All right, everyone. So I hope you enjoyed that interview, and it's very inspiring what Dan has been able to create with his fellow HBCU alumni and also his fraternity brothers as well. So once again, it just goes to show you the power and how impactful the HBCU influence is. So be sure to follow Dan. He's on Instagram at dwarelaflair. And also follow his business page. It's Music Breaker. So it's Music, BREAKR on social media platforms. Stay tuned, and also be sure to follow us. We're on social media as well at Historically Black Sense, as INCE, and www.hbcusense.com. All right, see you next time.